Welcome back. Before we get into this week's episode, which is all around Bitcoin, and I say Bitcoin and I'm not talking about other cryptocurrencies, where we are today, where I'm recording this is on the 4th of March, and we're currently sitting at $65,000 a coin on Bitcoin. So when you listen to this, it'll be interesting to see where we are. But obviously, with any kind of investing comes an element of risk. And with any sort of financial services products, there's also risk and there's compliance and there's regulations. And that's why we're really delighted to have LexisNexis Risk Solutions as our sponsor of this podcast. So a big thank you to them and their team. If you are looking at different risk solutions for your business, for your enterprise, then please do give the guys a shout. The link's down below in the comments. A business that's been around for many, many, many years, but are constantly innovating, constantly coming up with new ways to combat financial crime. So enjoy this episode. It's an interesting one, I promise you. So sit back and relax. Hey, welcome everyone. Welcome back to Talking Success. We're on another journey today. We're talking all things crypto. We're not giving you investment advice, I promise. We're not going to be pushing any coins or even talking about sort of any particular coins or prices of coins. What we're going to be focusing on today is the utility behind cryptocurrencies. Okay. And I'm delighted to be joined by Lorian Gamarov, who is one of the co-founders at Sentby, who I will let Lorian actually do an intro to today. We both brushed our hair specifically for this podcast. So we hope you enjoy it and hope our locks don't get in the way of our wonderful faces and our lovely voices. Lorian, listen, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining. I know we kind of tried to get this done back end of last year, and I think what with end of year happening and me being on vacation and then not being well, it was a bit challenging to get in. But anyway, we're in February, we're into February. It's great to have you on board. I know there's a hell of a lot going on in your world or in the crypto world, certainly in South Africa. But perhaps we can talk a little bit more about what's happening across the continent. But before we get into all of that, I'd love to get a quick intro from you. Tell us a bit about who you are, where you are. I know you've got four sons and you're not showing us the rest of your room, but give us an overview, Lorian. It's good to have you on board.
Thanks. No, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here. And, you know, you're saying the busyness of your year and your life. And, you know, of course, the last few years has been pretty crazy, you know, just pretty busy. Just to think about the world, how things are just politically, but then of course with AI, I mean, it just seems life is just becoming a kind of whirlwind for most of us. And if you can't keep up to speed, you're going to be left behind. So it definitely feels like that. And in terms of my industry and the last few years of my life, I think, in fact, more than the last few years, more than a decade now, since about 2011, I've been very much involved in the whole blockchain space. When I first heard about Bitcoin, it was way before any of the crypto things had started happening, the exchanges, all that. It really was just this novel new payment system that was going to make things cheaper and more accessible. And so that's when I got involved way back then, and really have been pursuing that now for now, what's it, 13, 14 years. And so that's what I've been doing, is trying to see, can we leverage blockchain in all sorts of ways that can assist with payments, bringing down the cost of digital payments, but then also ways that governments can use it and enterprises can use it for all sorts of use cases maybe that we haven't thought of. That's really just been my whole focus, is around the original idea of blockchain, which of course was Bitcoin, and that it was going to become this new kind of payment rail, but one that was compliant with all the rules around payments. It was a transparent ledger. It was decentralized, but it was still a subject under the law in terms of computer law and financial law and all that. You know, the whole idea of mining and all that was actually built so that law enforcement could have control over it and regulators could have control over it. But that message was lost. And so for the last 13 years, I've been trying to just keep that original idea of blockchain and Bitcoin, what it meant, trying to create products, which we can talk about my company now, and trying to realize what we call Satoshi's vision, which was Satoshi Nakamoto, the inventor of Bitcoin. And that's pretty much what I've been doing for a long time now.
You weren't that guy that sort of spent 30 Bitcoin on a pizza, were you?
No, I'm not that guy. I think it was 1,000 or 10,000 BTC. But no, I'm not that guy. But I did have Bitcoin very early on, before it really had any value. But for me, it in those days, of course, it didn't seem that it could grow in value massively. We were amazed when it got to a dollar. But also, it's not that I've been interested in it from an investment point of view. You know, I felt that the real value now was trying to build an application or a technology that uses blockchain in the same way the internet made millionaires. It wasn't because you bought internet stocks, although, of course, people who bought stocks can make money. But it was the founders, you know, the tech startup guys, the Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. And that was and I went through that. I was a student, a computer science student in the 1990s doing computer science before the internet took off. And was swept along. That was my career, was building internet, this internet world. And so I always had that feeling of, no, I want to build companies. That's why I never got into the whole investment thesis around crypto. And of course, you know, that's really what it's become today. It's gambling.
Before mostly. We get into kind of the utility behind crypto, and certainly what you're doing now and the projects you're involved in at the moment, I think it's important to sort of demystify the myth around blockchain and crypto. And you very eloquently sort of put it just now, is that, yes, okay, people can make money by buying and selling and trading, you know, cryptocurrencies and altcoins and all of these other things. But there is a fundamental user case around this, or utility around cryptocurrency, which is payments, remittance. What else would you say were transparency? What else would you say were the core sort of fundamentals around cryptocurrencies, aside from the, you know, get rich quick schemes?
Yes, and I'm going to start right away with the word that you are using, the cryptocurrency. Mm. Now, when you say these use cases, payments, remittances, and all that for cryptocurrency, I'm going to tell you cryptocurrency has none of those use cases. Cryptocurrency, which we can define, and the way it's used today, has no legal use case. Even though it can perhaps facilitate these sorts of things, it doesn't make it viable. And so now that's why I want to differentiate between the word cryptocurrency and the original word that we started off with, which was Bitcoin. Bitcoin, as originally devised, was not cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency is trying to encrypt things and anonymize things and make things maximally decentralized so they cannot be controlled. That's what cryptocurrency has become. The original idea of Bitcoin was quite different from cryptocurrency. It wasn't about anonymity or maximum decentralization. Decentralization, which was a term that became overused, was just for really redundancy, to keep the network redundant. But then, of course, this novel idea of making offline payments, digital cash payments, not through a central server. It's a very deep subject we can get into. But really, the cryptocurrency idea is really a perversion of what is useful and has all those things, as you say, the low-cost payments, which is the Bitcoin blockchain. And let's just call it blockchain for now so we don't confuse people, because even Bitcoin today is confusing. There are multiple versions of Bitcoin. So the blockchain use case, which is a decentralized ledger, with all the properties of Bitcoin, it has a proof of work, which just means that it economically incentivizes miners. So the Bitcoin use cases as a decentralized ledger, that is very useful and practical for a lot of different things. If you have an immutable ledger, it means that you can reliably trust it to store information, especially things like in supply chains. If you want to track the provenance of items through a supply chain, you can log them to a blockchain, and you would be able to edit those records, and so it's a reliable thing. Also with time stamping, in fact, the way Bitcoin's inventor really expressed the idea of Bitcoin was as a time stamping server. In other words, a way that you can reliably date information and things. And that's very useful as well. So, and then of course, having a token on a blockchain means that now you need to acquire those tokens so that you can go and use that ledger. And with a limited supply, suddenly you introduce this idea of a sound payment system or a money system, if you like, one where you can make payments in a low cost digital way. And that's something that has intrigued me over the last 10 years. Excuse me, I'm just
going to... No, you water. I think the world of crypto perhaps has been sort of tarnished, I suppose, by what we've seen over the last, you know, certainly a few years. I mean, there was a famous case of a couple of South African brothers who ran off with a vast amount of sort of crypto holdings or funds. Then we had FTX. And we've got, you know, quite a few of these sort of situations that have occurred that I think you speak to the public about, the general public about, you know, crypto, it's like, oh, that's risky. Oh, that's kind of underground. And it's, you know, it's money laundering and things like that. So I think, you know, it has sort of got that tarnish almost. And I think in some parts of the world, or certainly some communities, it's almost a bit of a taboo subject. You know, we can't talk about that, but it's not real money. You're going to lose everything. But we're not talking about trading. We are talking about utilities behind. You have mentioned Bitcoin a number of times already. What is special about Bitcoin versus Ethereum or all the others, Cardano and XLM and XRP and all of these other sort of coins or frameworks that are out there? Why is Bitcoin so different? And from the sound of things, and from the look over your shoulders as well, your little Bitcoin sign, it sounds like you've got sort of a reasoning behind that. I'd love to explore that.
Yes, there are many, and we could go through all of them. I think the most important one, though, is if you want to think about the success of a technology, and we're not talking about a technology, an application of a technology like a car. Yep. You buy a car and it's built with technology, but you know that 10 years later, there's going to be new technology that's going to improve upon it. And so that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is a good example, a good illustration of a foundational technology is the internet mm-hmm. itself. Now, the internet is based on a set of rules about how information moves across the network. We call that the protocol. So when we talk about protocol, we just mean rules, the way that we behave, the agreements that we make, that we stick to. And of course, children know this when they eat at a table, they know they can't play with their food. They have to eat neatly with their fork or knife or whatever it is. So the internet became a foundational technology because it defined a protocol and that protocol was set in stone. And that gave businesses confidence to be able to invest money to build applications on top of mm-hmm. that protocol. And so what made the internet so successful, and this story is played out on with other protocols, is that it was defined and then set in stone and made stable. And no changes could be made to it thereafter. Obviously, there could be, theoretically, but fundamentally, the internet protocol hasn't changed. And that means that now for the last 30, 40 years, we've seen this explosion of the internet around us where there's apps everywhere and we're all online and we yep. can't live without it. Now, when it comes to a blockchain, you must think about it just like the internet protocol. The blockchain is a protocol. That's what we call it. And it's a set of rules. Famously, the first protocol was defined in the Bitcoin white paper. That white paper just describes the rules of how the system should work. Now, a very important thing about a blockchain and crypto and all that is if those projects want to succeed, they have to already state and stick to that philosophy that they're not going to change the protocol level. And so what we've seen, though, is that all the people involved in crypto, they don't think of it as them building utility systems that enterprises and corporations and governments can now start utilizing. A lot of what drives crypto is just this kind of cypherpunk view that they want to create systems that cannot be stopped by government that cannot be co-opted by large corporations, you know, owned by Microsoft or owned by Google. And so they don't have that sense of building out systems that are there to create confidence in a capitalist world where entrepreneurs can come and just build on top and be willing to invest money in creating apps and things. Because they, for them, the most fundamental thing is the flexibility and dynamism, you know, just all these things trying to, and especially progressing for most of the most part in a way that makes it more anonymous and more ungovernable. So already we can see that the seeds of all these crypto projects, their destruction has been sown within their fabric. And so that's why when I said earlier that Bitcoin itself has multiple versions, because some people in the Bitcoin community wanted to change the protocol because they weren't interested in creating a foundational protocol that governments and businesses and everybody could now start using. That's when we had a split in the Bitcoin community where some wanted to change the Bitcoin protocol and others didn't. And that's why today we have three main versions of Bitcoin, each of them starting off from the same protocol. And now BTC, for example, made very fundamental changes. First of all, and not to get too deep into it, by removing signatures from transactions. Now, that just signals that they are not interested in creating a technology that is adopted by the world, at least from a corporate government type of thing. It's just for the people. So when I say Bitcoin, I don't necessarily mean the Bitcoin that you see people trading on exchanges today. But what I mean is that original protocol, first and foremost, because there are a group of us out there, and that little logo behind me is for the what is called the Satoshi's Vision version of Bitcoin, which is the original version. And why is it so important? Why do we believe that one will succeed? Well, because first and foremost, we've kept the protocol set in stone. But I've already alluded to the other reasons, and just let me just have another sip there. I think I'll be talking a lot
that's
today.
Good. It makes my job a lot. I'll tell you that, Lauren.
And so, yes, and so another reason why we believe that Bitcoin, Satoshi's Bitcoin, is going to succeed is that the way it was designed, as I have alluded to before, is that it was designed to be regulatory compliant, so that any kind of anti-money laundering, terrorist financing, all that kind of stuff can be applied, as well as auditing and traceability of transactions. And you see, Bitcoin was pseudonymous and not anonymous. You know, pseudonymous means you can see the transactions, but you don't necessarily know who they are connected to. Whereas anonymous means you don't know anything. And so just based on its design of being a transparent ledger, one that had a traceable nature, you know, every transaction is linked to the previous one. Interestingly is that the whole nature of scaling, which is something that, again, divides the Bitcoin communities. Now, what does that mean? The thing about the BTC community now, the one branch of Bitcoin who want to make changes to the protocol, they don't want Bitcoin to become too big for the average person to be able to handle. You know, they believe very much that people should have servers that or a laptop at home, and they can run the Bitcoin blockchain, and it's small, and it's not too much data and bandwidth. And so one of the things that's divided the Bitcoin community was the ones who wanted to make the changes said that they want to keep the blocks of transactions small. In other words, the transaction throughput small, so that the common man, you know, common person can go and have a little laptop running the Bitcoin node. Now, again, what they have signaled is that they don't want this ever to be used on scale, you know, on mass. They just want it to be used for people underground, making little transactions, sending money from one to the other. And obviously now that's hit a problem. And so they are banking on other technologies out there to try and do that. But whereas Bitcoin was always intentionally meant to scale, it was meant to grow massive. even though in the writings of the inventor, he said that eventually these mining operations are going to be huge. They're going to be in data centers. There's not going to be many of them. And we need that so we can scale commercially. So that's another reason why when we look at these other cryptos out there, most of them are not trying to figure out a massive scaling situation, one that, again, involves large entities, corporate entities. And why do they not want that? Because remember, they have in their philosophy, and this is crypto generally, they don't want Bitcoin or crypto, not Bitcoin, crypto, centralized into a few organizations around the world that can then government and sorry, law enforcement can come and knock on the door and say, hang on, what are you guys doing here? Give us the keys. We're going to seize all your equipment. So the crypto community always want to keep it small, keep it hidden, keep it underground. And so that means they can't scale it massively. So that is a very critical part of this whole thing. Not only must we have a legal system, it mustn't be anonymous. It must be pseudonymous. We must be able to link identities to those transactions. And that's CentBee has a role in that because we do KYC verifications on our customers. We then link them to their transactions. And when we do need to present that information in a case or something, we can then show that information. Now, with these cryptos, they're trying to obfuscate that and hide it. So the original idea of Bitcoin, when Satoshi Nakamoto came along and invented it, the amazing thing about it, it's not this technological marvel, but what it is a combination of very deep insight into how payments work in within the legal frameworks and regulatory frameworks, how economics works. And he put that together to make a system that won't be something that governments want to shut down. But the irony is, and in fact, I gave a keynote at the Africa RegTech last year, and I'll be back there in Lagos again this year. And when I was at that when I gave that keynote, I said regulators mustn't look at how to control. That's not their own. That's not what they should be focused on. It's trying to control blockchain, but trying to bring it in and trying to leverage it to see if they can improve their systems and their services. And there's plenty of ways to do that. So you asked me the question: why do I believe that it's going to be the Bitcoin, the Satoshi's vision version of Bitcoin versus all these other cryptos, Ethereum and all that? What makes it different? Bitcoin had a unique combination of ingredients, and this is why it was, heralded today as a marvel, and the guy should get an economics Nobel Prize, you know, because he brought these different disciplines into a great system that could come onto the world, that would be embraced, that would eliminate fraud. It would bring down the costs of transactions. It would enable cross-border payments at low cost. He didn't come into the world, and this is the biggest misunderstanding. He didn't come and create Bitcoin to be a system that could be outside of the control of all the, you know, all the regulatory authorities. That was this anarchist dream of being able to create a system that was untouchable and unstoppable and uncensorable. You know, those are the words they use, but clearly, that's not how things are going to pan out. You know, that was an explanation on why I think
so. I certainly learned a lot just now, so thank you for that. It was interesting. When I met your business partner, Angus, back in the last year, we were chatting sort of through this, and we'll come on to CentBee in a second. And he mentioned, you know, using the Bitcoin sort of protocols. And I remember sitting there going, why are you doing that? Because everyone says it's so expensive. Obviously, you've got volatility, but you've got volatility in kind of any digital currency, unless arguably it's a stable coin. And I didn't really understand the strategy or the thought process behind, in CentBee's business, using, which we'll come on to in a minute, but using kind of the Bitcoin blockchain. Now you kind of explained it. I completely get it, which is a really good segue onto kind of CentBee and what you guys are doing down there. But perhaps you can give us an overview in terms of what the business is. And I know there's a couple of different things that you guys do, but what the business is, where you kind of focus on what the kind of the uniqueness is around the services and the products that you offer.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yes, I can tell you this, that my vision and my goal has been the same since 2011, when I first heard about Bitcoin, and it was just the early days when it was just about this low-cost digital right. cash system. That's what hooked me. And since that day, I've been progressing to try and make that world a reality where people can easily use Bitcoin as cash, which is what it was described as, digital cash, and they can use it instead of physical cash. So for low cost things, you know, buying a pack of gum or buying some electricity, topping up your phone with data, getting an Uber, shopping at the local supermarket. You know, that was my vision, was I wanted to now bring it. And in fact, I'll tell you why that even got started, and I can go back a bit. When I first started getting involved in Bitcoin, I was working at a smart energy startup where we were creating smart metering systems and payment systems so that here in South Africa, Africans could buy electricity. But we had this issue with cash. That was an inconvenient way of doing it. They didn't have cards. And so I was looking at ways that people could buy electricity. And that's when Bitcoin came along. And I thought, great, a digital payment method that's going to be really convenient. And that's what gave me the last 13 years vision, is to try and create an app that people could buy electricity and buy the things that they want. If you're interested more in that story, there's even a TEDx talk that I gave in Switzerland. You can just Google my name or YouTube my
name. We'll put the link here so you can have a watch of this. Absolutely.
Yes, Gamrov TEDx, you'll see the story of that. In fact, there's even a documentary called Banking on Africa, which is also on my YouTube channel. It's a general crypto documentary, but my story is featured there, where I created this system for a local school and all those things. So you can go and check this out. But the idea was then to build, make it easy for, and here in South Africa, people to use Bitcoin, get it, spend it. And that culminated now in the company that I am the CEO of, which is called Centbe. And Centbe is a wallet. It's a mobile money app, in fact. I categorize Centbe in the same way if you look at M-Pesa or Airtel Money or Momo, yep. MTN Momo. Centbe is a mobile money app, except it uses original Bitcoin, which is BSV, if you look at it on exchange, is the title of Bitcoin Satoshi's vision. That's the low-cost digital cash that Centbe uses. And that gives us the ability for people to be able to buy very low-cost things. We've integrated gift cards from around the world. So it's not just in Africa. We're actually around the world. And you can now go and use digital cash in the form of BSV to purchase things. Also to send money to people. So it's a great P2P system. And of course, cross-border. We have the ability for you to send cross-border because it's global digital yep. cash. But we can then allow you to send money directly to a bank account or a mobile money account or a cash collection in a whole bunch of countries in Africa, Brazil, around the world. You can do this. So really, that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to make the original idea of Bitcoin, which is digital cash, create a wallet, use it like mobile money, become a mobile money replacement. We want to take on all those mobile money companies. We think we've got what it takes to do that. And we're growing strongly, especially in Nigeria and places like that. So yeah, check out Centbe. We've also got a show. If you want to check out the Centbe show with my colleague, we talk about Centbe and we talk about Bitcoin and also try and dispel the false narratives in the same way we're doing here.
I've got a million questions, but I'm conscious of time. But let's talk about the remittance side, the P2P side. Obviously, in Africa and in other countries, we're governed by quite strict exchange controls when we are moving currency, foreign currency, in or out of the country. How does that work from an SMB perspective, or you know, digital cash? If I'm sending money to a relative in Zimbabwe or Uganda or Tanzania or wherever it may be, I assume the it's on me to disclose that under my sort of to SARS and the revenue authorities that actually I'm making this transaction. Is it quite complicated? I know when I'm receiving funds from an overseas, you know, customer, I have to go through a whole lot of sort of tick boxes on the banking system just to collect, you know, $50. Does that add a layer of complexity to what you guys do? Or is there a way around this that you've found obviously compliantly and legally?
Yes, it does add layer of complexity, but we just have to comply. We are an accountable institution and now soon to be licensed. So we have to just follow all the same rules that all the other fintechs that move money cross-border have to comply with. We have to do an extensive KYC process where we validate your document and your face. And we have to enforce limits. So we have very conservative limits at the moment. You know, we're looking at, we started off where St. B was kind of looking at that lower LSM, people who send about, you know, a couple hundred, I guess, dollars a month, home once a month to their family. So we decided to start off with very low limits, a few $1,000 a month type of thing. And so with the KYC process, with that in place, also, of course, we have to do AML. So we have to make sure that users aren't skirting around the controls. And that's very onerous. You know, we have to make sure that users aren't creating multiple accounts or using friends' accounts and sending to the same bank accounts. And, you know, there's a lot of different checks that I've personally had to go through, you know, with SentB, making sure we close those loopholes. And so that's just the nature of it. Of course, when it comes to interacting with the local currencies, there's always going to be switching costs and compliance costs there. That's just unavoidable. But really, if you are in a BSV or Bitcoin world, there hasn't been any explicit controls over how much users can send if it's only working within the BSV economy. So there we don't keep track of that. So it is very possible for you to send sort of larger amounts across border. But then, of course, if you want to convert that into local currency, you're going to have to go through those compliance checks. You won't be able to just move huge amounts of money. It's very difficult, especially because of our target market. You know, we're looking at that teenager student market. If you look at our advertising, if you follow us on Twitter, you'll see that it's got a very youth focus. So we think that's going to be a good niche for these mobile money products, especially with youngsters today who are just born with screens. But yes, just to sum up, you know, we do have to go through all the right sorts of controls, and it's because we want to provide a useful service to users. We want to stay within the rules of the law because we want to grow, and we believe that by doing that, we'll have a much better chance than all these crypto people who think they can just do it through force of their own.
Absolutely. The other, I suppose, but maybe public opinion or public view, correct me if I'm wrong, you're clearly the subject matter expert in this, is, you know, I speak to people and they're concerned about the volatility. They're concerned about the volatility of, okay, For example, I buy one Bitcoin today and it's worth $51,000. I wake up tomorrow and it's worth $35,000, right? So you've got that degree of uncertainty. And I think you mentioned that word very early on, and I'm pleased you did. It's almost like gambling, right? How do you ensure that consumers, your customers who are coming onto the SentB platform, either are aware of a risk, or have you mitigated the risk? And actually, there is very little, because of the protocols and the type of services that you offer, there's very little exposure to the volatility of the markets. How does that work?
Yes, you know, this whole volatility issue, of course, and it's a sad result of the whole crypto craze that took off after Bitcoin was delivered to us. And you know, this idea of speculating and my crypto is going to go up higher than your crypto and let's just take a punt and flipping and pumping and dumping. You know, that all is that whole perversion that I mentioned, taking now a generally useful thing into this world of uncertainty. And of course, this is why we have all these scammers, because we hear people getting rich and everybody wants to get in on it and scammers just swoop in. It makes the regulators antsy because now they have to watch out for potential businesses who on the surface looked legit, but now they're just going to walk off the money. So this is just a very sad result of what's been going on. I'm really hoping that crypto will eventually fade away, and then we'll see what happens afterwards. But in terms of volatility without that, let's just imagine there wasn't any of that. Where would we have been? Because of course, I'm still an advocate of Bitcoin. I believe in it on its own. I believe there'll only ever be a single blockchain, just like we have a single internet, and that's the one. But of course, how then would the volatility be affected? Of course, we would look at it and say, well, just because there's one crypto doesn't mean there's not going to be volatility. Now, that takes us back to the whole utility aspect of Bitcoin. You see, when you do just have a token that just gets flipped on exchanges, well, that is gambling, because you're not trading any fundamental value. You know, there's no asset underlying any of these things. You can't even use the blockchains for all those reasons that we went through. But if you looked at Bitcoin, and this is really why you've got to look at it as a utility ledger first and foremost, because without that utility ledger, in other words, a useful platform or thing that we want to use for our day-to-day lives, without that, and if it's just a token, then how can anyone really think that it has value? Sure, it can have a price, but the two are very different. And unfortunately, when we look at BTC today, and I'm going to call it out specifically because, you know, I'm talking about the Bitcoin. So Bitcoin and BTC, which is the one traded on exchanges and the highest value, really all you have there is a token, because you can't use that ledger for anything. It's too expensive. So when you have a utility ledger, now suddenly you have a fundamental, something that you can look at and say, how useful is this to me? And if Bitcoin does become a utility ledger, one that can provide services and make things more efficient and enable new business models, if it can do that, then what's going to happen is we're going to have a natural demand for the token. And if there is a supply that we already understand, that fixed supply, well, now we are going to have demand and supply. And so if Bitcoin, any Bitcoin, even the original Bitcoin, if nobody can figure out a use for it, it's not going to be a stable store of value. It's not going to be anything. It's just going to be a token we flip on exchanges, and that volatility will never go away, and it will never become a useful form of cash or anything like that. So what CENTBI is unfortunately living through right now is a world where BSV is still lumped together with crypto. Most people don't know the difference. Second of all, because of the regulatory reluctance to grant Bitcoin companies, entrepreneurs who are looking to find licenses so that they can make the right partnerships, because regulators are so, not really keen to because of crypto. So what's happening is that everything's delayed, and we're waiting to see if BSV, Bitcoin SV, or any crypto can suddenly become a utility, not suddenly, can eventually become a utility ledger. Now, I believe that it will. You know, I've been studying blockchain and BSV blockchain, Bitcoin blockchain for more than a decade. This has been my world. And in fact, before I even started with CENTBI, you know, I had a few other companies in blockchain. I had a training academy and a consulting advisory company doing blockchain advisory to corporates and governments and that all around the world. And I now am convinced that there are many serious and now, especially if you look for it, well understood use cases. And all we now need are those entrepreneurs to start building out those products to get to that point where everyone can see, oh, this is a useful thing. Great. Now we can get there. So I'm actually, unfortunately, ahead of my time. you know, I started conceiving of SentBe in 2011. 10 years later, more than 10 years later, now I have it, and it's still the because of crypto, the industry is still lagging. And I'm just hoping I can, you know, keep staying here and getting market share, and slowly users can start getting on board and seeing what's going on. And eventually, once crypto is cleared out, which I, like I said, I do believe it will be. I mean, it's illegal and scammy, and regulators are coming after it. When we start seeing these use cases, then of course we'll see a natural price versus, you know, what's going on. People demand, supply. That's what we want. We want a natural supply and demand economy, not a speculative economy. And I'm hoping at that stage, BSV as cash becomes much more stable. Now, I'll be honest, when that's going to happen, I have no idea. I hope it's relatively soon, as long as my investors can hope for. But if I can crack through that, then I believe we'll see companies like the mobile money companies in Africa, M-Pesa. We'll see everybody jumping onto it. They'll say, oh, what? Well, it's just like the internet then. It's just a blockchain. Yes, okay, it's, you know, it's not the scary thing. If you're old enough to remember the 90s, I'm sure I am. Yes. The internet was a very uncertain, scary thing until we figured out how to use it. And I feel like blockchain's on its way there eventually.
I've got kind of a last question for you around the whole sort of utility around, you know, behind sort of blockchain and what have you. And sorry, I should mention as well that, you know, I think the regulators, certainly here in South Africa and in other parts of the continent, other parts of the world, are now looking at digital currencies, whether it be central bank digital currencies or whether it be crypto asset service providers, that they're looking at licensing. And I know SentBe is quite far down the line with the licensing application here in South Africa, which is a wonderful thing, right? It really is. I think it legitimizes, you know, the whole sector. But my last question to you, and I've covered this a couple of times recently, and I think I know what your answer is going to be. But there's a lot of talk around using stablecoin as a utility, and the stablecoin actually being this platform in order to transact, and for me to send, you know, I'm going to send my dollars to you in the UK, and I'm just using a stable coin to do that, therefore zero volatility in theory. Do you see, is there a difference between the stable coin and the BSV that you're talking about? Is stable coin still classed as a blockchain technology, or is that a digital currency that's not necessarily got the utility behind it with all the things that you've just discussed? I'd love to just get your view on that.
Right. So leaving all my political philosophy or economic philosophy behind in terms of whether I think stable coins themselves linked to fiat currencies are going to be worth anything, I'll leave that one aside. But let's just talk about the implementation. Now, as we've been saying, and what I believe deeply is that blockchain is a protocol layer that is going to be and can be used for all sorts of use cases. And the one use case, the one that I'm interested in, is using the native token as cash, because I hope eventually it will become stable and you can just use it straight off the bat. But there's nothing stopping other people coming and creating other applications and use cases on top of the blockchain that aren't directly related to the Bitcoin token. So, for example, when we talk about stable coins, yes, that is a perfect use case to go and build a stable coin. If you want a stable coin, if that's what people want and that's what is needed, absolutely go and build a stable coin on top of the blockchain, because you have the all the security and all that whole business, the way that the blockchain is supported and maintained, you've got all that for free. You don't have to go and now set up a network that's going to be interoperable. And I mean, if you think about people, for decades, people have been trying to figure out these interoperable payment systems. You know, we've got SWIFT and all that, you know, but go, if you want to have a stable coin and you want it to be secure and you want it to be peer to peer and you want to do all those things, go build it on the blockchain. And so I think that stable coins are great ideas for blockchain. And again, that if we do build a stable coin on top of the blockchain, well, guess what? It makes that blockchain now more valuable because it's now being used. It's a useful thing. So these are the kinds of use cases that I'm talking about. We did talk about other ones, but stable coins, absolutely. I mean, whether the stable coin itself has its own value, of course, that's up to the issuers and the governments and the taxpayers and all that. But that is an example of the kinds of use cases that we hope to see. And so I'm very keen on that. And in fact, CentBee, well, when we look at using BSV natively as a token, you know, there's nothing stopping a wallet like CentBee from incorporating a stablecoin into it and using it on the BSV blockchain. So CentBee already has that capability. I do think this is, in fact, how it's going to unfold. I don't think the world is now suddenly going to flip and say, all right, we all want BSV and national currencies are going to disappear and all that. Look, that would be nice. And that's that whole idea of a sound money, you know, a fixed supply and all that. But that it's not it just doesn't seem like it's likely. So I'm hoping that countries around the world all start looking at it. You know, with these CBDCs, again, whether you like them or not, the CBDC is going to have a huge problem trying to create a payment network that works like cash. And guess what? Bitcoin solved that problem. This is the amazing thing about it, is that it solved problems that we've had forever. How do you create peer-to-peer transactions offline with digital payments? Bitcoin solved that. So if the CBDC wants to succeed, it's going to need a technology like Bitcoin to be able to make it work. And this is what I do a lot of, speaking to central bank governors and ExCos and all that. I've done that many times, and said to them, just like I spoke to the regulators at the RegTech Africa, and I'll do again this year. You want a CBDC? Go and leverage this blockchain. It's scaling massively. The community around it has, because of that philosophy of a stable protocol, a massively stable, scalable protocol.
Easy to say.
It means now that if you're looking for a solution for your CBDC, there it is. Go and implement it on that blockchain. And it's just going to make that blockchain now fundamentally valuable. And until we see that with any blockchain, until the day comes when you see a blockchain with an enterprise customer or a bank or maybe a small local government or something, somebody using that blockchain, then you can say, all right, now if we're talking about investment now, that's a blockchain that might have legs, because now we're seeing adoption. Adoption doesn't mean I've bought crypto. This is another misnomer. You know, they say it all the time. Bitcoin's adopted because there's this many holders. That doesn't make you an adopter. An adopter is you are using the technology. And so amazingly now, the BSV blockchain has already got those sorts of projects going on now with governments. Nigeria is a very good example where a BSV blockchain is now being looked at as a foundational enterprise layer that can now facilitate transactions and all that sort of thing. So that's the power of BSV.
Well, Glenn, I must say, I do, you know, a podcast once a week, and I've had some amazing people on. I really have, and I've learned so much about the sector, sort of generally in fintech. But in terms of learning about utility behind blockchain and Bitcoin and sort of where it's come from, what it still stands for, I've been blown away. I really have. I mean, I've learned so much in just, you know, in 45 minutes. So a huge thank you to you. And as I said at the beginning, I'm going to put some links down here to Lauren's TED Talks and to CentBee. Please, if you're, you know, interested in this world, check out CentBee. I've actually got it on my phone as well. So check them out. We've been through a whole 45 minutes talking about Bitcoin, and I haven't even mentioned the halving, but I'm not even going to talk about that, right? That's the speculators. We'll worry about that later on.
Or the Satoshi Nakamoto trial that's going on. That's the biggest news of Bitcoin crypto.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a shortcut code you can put into your Apple Mac. Apple Mac, I sound like I'm from the 1970s. Your MacBooks, and you can get the whole Santoshi sort of white paper. I'm sure I read that somewhere. There's a little embedded.
Yes, I have. Yeah. I have heard that. Oh. Yes, I have heard that. But I mean, right now there's this big trial going on in the UK. There are big companies like Coinbase, and Meta was even involved, but then exited because they're suing a guy who is saying that he's Satoshi and they don't like him. But it could very well turn out that Dr. Craig Wright, who's on trial, actually turns out to be Satoshi Nakamoto. So it's a very interesting trial. If you can find out more information, don't read any mainstream media. You know, you can never believe that, but it's a very interesting trial. The trial of Satoshi Nakamoto. Maybe we'll finally find out who is the creator of Bitcoin.
Well, that'd be something, wouldn't it? We'll have to do a podcast on that one. But Lauren, listen, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. I'll pop some links, as I said, at the bottom. People want to connect with you on sort of LinkedIn and Twitter and follow Senbi, and I'll put some other links there as well. But good luck with the licensing application. Your fingers are crossed. I'm sure you guys are going to breeze through that. And excited to see what you guys have got in store for this year and beyond. Take care.